Another win, another blowout, and no nitpicking allowed. Welcome to Snap Judgments. He is Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. Don't do it.
I'm not going to.
We are in Section 34 at Ross-Ade Stadium. Perfect, because Ohio State won 34-10 over the Purdue Boilermakers in a game that I called like a scrimmage for Ohio State. And I know that Ryan Day, I think he didn't want to embrace that verbiage, of course. Was seemed a little bit annoyed that I called it that, because he respects Barry Odom. Purdue played very hard and fought hard today and last week against Michigan. But considering all of the changes and all of the precautionary measures that Ohio State took with both its play calling, in my opinion, and definitely with its personnel, which is undeniable, with Phillip Daniels not playing, Carnell Tate not playing, Josh Padilla being out, on so on down the list, I felt like they just wanted to get in and out of the stadium as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan may not like the title of a scrimmage, but the description fits. It felt like it. I mean, especially if you watched Ohio State calling a timeout with a minute to go at the end of the first half to get the ball back so that they could work on a two-minute drill, which Ryan Day said, you know, they haven't had a chance to do that this year. Jaden Fielding comes up, kicks a big field goal. Those are the things you have to work on in situational football that it sounds like you can do it in practice every once in a while, but it's a whole lot different when the team that's playing you is trying to actually stop you and trying to hurt you. So it was a good opportunity for a lot of young guys. It was interesting. We didn't know about Carnell Tate not going. Ryan Day said he tightened up pregame and they didn't want to risk him. So then the first drive of the game, you see Mylon Graham out there on offense. You see Riley Pettijohn on defense. You see all the changes, multiple rotations still on the offensive line, moving Ethan Anianwa out there for Tegra Shimola anyway, moving, Gabe Van Sickle out there for Tegra, moving Ethan out to right tackle, just doing a lot of things. And it's fun when you can do that in the Big Ten. Like, you don't have to win 60-0 to play around.
Yeah, and I mean, play around, toy around, that's sort of how I feel about the way that this game went for Ohio State and why welcome to Snap Judgments, by the way. He's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. Why I feel like, you know, in other games, other opportunities where we would see Ohio State play with its food, to borrow a term that you use for some games we've seen over the last couple of years, like, this very much was a fine opportunity to experiment. It might be the last one that Ohio State actually gets. And some of it was forced by the injuries. Some of it, I think, was just a reflection of an opponent that was never going to actually push them around or seriously test them. So I feel like once we leave Ross-Ade Stadium, like, I'll forget about everything that happened in this game. And I don't think that there's anything that happened in it that would have me concerned about what it means for Ohio State when it goes to the Big House, what it would mean in a Big Ten championship game, or what it would mean for the college football playoff. You kind of shook your head at the start, like, that maybe there was something you want to nitpick, but to me, I don't think it belongs for this game.
No, it doesn't belong for this game. Again, it's what we talked about last week after on Snap Judgments. Everything is geared up towards those last two, game in Ann Arbor, game in Indianapolis. Like, obviously, you want to be more efficient in the red zone if you're Ohio State. You want the play calling to be a little bit better in the red zone or more effective. Maybe there's nothing wrong with the plays and it's just not being executed. I don't know. Obviously, we continue to see the Buckeyes doing a lot of the heavy packages, a lot of the jumbo sets with all the tight ends, and just missed blocks, things like that seem to really put you in a bind. Julian saying, I'm confident, would love to have one throwback today. It's the worst throw he's made as a starting quarterback at Ohio State, the interception in the end zone. But you're up 24-3 in that situation, and you are trying to get points, maybe you forced it. But I think that comes – I think – a situation like that occurs for Julian because he forces something, because earlier in the game he made one of the most ridiculous throws I've seen an Ohio State quarterback make for a touchdown in decades to Jeremiah Smith. But Purdue deserves a lot of credit. They knew that with Carnell not out there that they were going to play Jeremiah soft. Buckeyes only tried to get down the field to him one time. That was the 35-yard touchdown. Ohio State had 30 first downs. I mean, they were exceptionally efficient in this game. It's hard sometimes when you see them just chunk, 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 and then you get into the 12-yard line and in, and you're like, all of a sudden you can't move the ball. So yeah. I think Ryan Day will have things that he wants to fix and things that he can take from this game. But overall, like you said, I mean, it felt like a scrimmage from the start. And when you win 34-10, yeah, Matt Patricia and the defense would love to not have given up the last touchdown with the backups out on the field, but that's what happens. It was aided by 30 yards of officials giving – yards to Purdue. So It is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, if there are things that I'm going to carry over from what Ohio State did against Purdue, they would be far more positive. When we talk about the red zone lack of efficiency, at least according to Ohio State's own standards for what they expect, which is 75% scoring touchdowns, we saw two wrinkles that come to mind immediately. Lincoln Kienholz goes in there. This happened the last time they came to Ross-Ade Stadium with Devin Brown. It went much better with Lincoln Kienholz today. Still doesn't mean that I'm necessarily a big fan of rotating quarterbacks. You can do pretty much everything in the arsenal as long as you have Julian Sain out there, but it did work. Lincoln Kienholz fakes a handoff to C.J. Donaldson, who turns into a lead blocker, power rush scheme, touchdown from 3 yards out, I believe. And then they also brought back the Bison package. It's something that we've been talking about. Do you have to always do this with three tight ends, four tight ends, five tight ends going on the field? No, they put in Justin Terry as an extra blocker. He puts on a 98. I was a little bit optimistic when I saw 98 coming out the first time. I was like, oh, maybe Caden McDonald is going to play fullback here. They didn't do that. That wasn't the wrinkle that we saw. But, you know, yes, they still got stopped on some plays that were less than optimal. And you had the turnover from Julian Sain down there in the red zone. You can't afford to make those opportunities. I understand all that. But when you have margin for error, then you're basically and you can accept that there are going to be errors. When you have the rotation that they showed, Gabe Van Sickle playing, Ian Moore starting at right tackle, when you put Riley Pettage on, and you and I talked about this on Thursday, I believe, and I was like, I don't know if they'll actually do it. Maybe this is a game where Ryan Day knows he's got the talent advantage, that he'll just put the players out there earlier, that he wants to get them reps. Riley Pettijohn is out there on the first drive. We saw that on offense. Mylon Graham as well. You know, again, some of it is necessity. Some of it is a desire for improvement down the stretch. And I think that stuff will be meaningful down the stretch because it didn't even come close to costing them the game.
No, it's not just even about opportunity. It's like, hey, there's another guy hurt or whatever. It's Ryan Day and Matt Patricia, these guys saying, let's see what you can do. And Ryan Day talked about it in his post-game press conference. Like, you're going to have moments for Gabe Van Sickle or Ian Moore in this game where you're like, hey, that looked really good. And then other moments where Ian Moore jumps off sides and you're like, okay, well, that's not what you want. And then, you know, Riley Pettijohn, I think, is out on that first drive because I think it was actually his job today to be the spy on Ryan Brown in that first drive.
He did, and then he didn't spy.
And, you know, it happens. Like, you get out there and you're like, okay, this is actually what college speed looks like. Ryan Brown is a pretty good athlete at quarterback for Purdue. You know, we had heard earlier in the week from Matt Patricia that he was like, well, that guy can move pretty good. And I joked with Matt walking off the field and said, well, Arvell couldn't stop him, so he's obviously not ready for the NFL. And Matt said, well, it was actually not Arvell's guy. I'm like, ah, shoot. So I tried to get Arvell to come back for another year, but
yeah.
That's probably not going to work.
Swing and a miss.
Swing and a miss. You know, what you saw today, though, was what Ohio State can do when it just decides we're going to throw it to Jeremiah Smith. Like in the 8 minutes or so of like competitive game that was today, it's like, well, okay, Jeremiah will do it. He's being dragged to the ground, catching tip balls, leaping.
That was nuts. I don't even know what his best catch was today.
Leaping catches at the 1 yard line, then the touchdown throw that Julian made. Like, this is what you can do at Ohio State. And that's why, like, I think people sometimes get so frustrated when you see the inefficiency in the run game or what feels like inefficiency. Both Isaiah West and Bo Jackson averaged over 5 yards today. Thought they both looked pretty good.
Yep.
Obviously, Bo Jackson's stat line would have been a whole lot different without the block in the back penalty on Jeremiah Smith on the game's first play. That would have been an 80-yard touchdown. But
he's allowed to make mistakes, too.
Yeah, whatever. It happens. But what you see is a team that says, hey, we can do some things here. I think Ryan Day would probably be encouraged by the running game from Isaiah West and Bo Jackson. I thought James Peoples ran the ball hard again when he was in there. Like, there's positives for sure. You saw, though, when Carnell Tate's off the field, someone else has to step up, and it took a little bit of time. Mylon Graham dropped I think he heard some footsteps on the first series of the game for Ohio State.
Yeah.
First
took him a while to get back out after that.
And didn't hold on to the ball. And then you see Bryson Rogers getting some catches. Brandon Innes getting involved. Max Clair had a 59-yard day. It's one of those things where you can just be like, well, we can do pretty much everything. Julian Sain's worst game, 82% and 303 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, the interception is something he's going to lament.
Yep.
But I don't think that anyone else is going to spend too much time worrying about something where it was clear he was just trying to force something on third and 10.
Yeah, and, you know, he'll learn from that. Sometimes, now that the Heisman Trophy campaign is up and running and he's the betting favorite to win it, we still have to be in this mode where this was his ninth game.
Yeah.
And this is the coolest temperatures that he's played in. I'm not justifying the decision. He knows that it wasn't the right one. And maybe that's not the spot to try it, especially when you're going to cruise against a team like Purdue anyway, that you don't have to force some of that stuff. But again, you get to this point as a first-year starting quarterback, he is still getting better and better every week. And every time we've seen him make a mistake like that, the next time it is improved. You don't see it pop back up again. And that's one of the most the highest praise that we can give him, because he is clearly learning and enhancing and improving every single week. So, you know, that's easier to do, I think, when you have Jeremiah Smith.
Yeah.
But if there had been some notion over the last couple of weeks that, you know, Carnell Tate is creeping up here and maybe he should be in the Heisman Trophy conversation as well. I'm not diminishing Carnell Tate's otherworldly athleticism, his ball, his ability to come down with every tough ball that is thrown his way, the impact that he makes. But Jeremiah, I think maybe that today would be one that helps him in the Heisman Trophy race, because he did not have his sidekick out there and all the attention was on him, and he still delivered a career high in receptions and was the touchdown right here. He just ran right past three defenders.
It's that play kind of reminded me, for the older Ohio State fans watching, like there was a play in 2006 where Troy Smith had a play against Penn State where you're like, why is he throwing that ball? And then it's like perfect. And you're like, oh, that's why.
Because he's Troy Smith.
And then, you know, Troy Smith wasn't throwing to Jeremiah Smith, and he threw a couple pretty good first round draft picks that year in 2006. But when Jeremiah Smith says, I'm just going to get vertical on you, and you, doesn't matter how many guys you have back there to stop him. So, kudos to Purdue. I thought they played well. I mean, they certainly competed. It's funny. We talked about it on the pregame keys. Like, how aggressive can you be if you're that? I thought they really were aggressive with Ryan Brown getting the ball down the field. Did not have a lot of success as expected, but they drew a couple pass interference penalties.
They very much went with the back shoulder throw, hope for PI offense.
Yeah, but that works for a lot of teams. And the reality is, I'm surprised. And not this is not a Purdue show, but like, why are you punting on fourth and two a bunch of times if you're trying to be this aggressive? Like, it seemed like kind of a mixed emotion or a mixed bag for Barry Odom and the Boilermakers, but they knew they weren't going to be able to slow down Ohio State. The Buckeyes still finished with just under 500 yards, gave up 160. The Purdue offense had 85 yards in the first quarter and ended up with 135 against the Ohio State starters. So another unbelievable response by Matt Patricia and his defense, figuring it out quickly, stopping what was working for Purdue in the first quarter, which is, again, tempo. Like, if you're looking for just things that are going to pop up again, like the tempo, the get to the line, quickly get the ball out, that is where Ohio State's defense is susceptible. So it's interesting now to see how that continues to be adapted to, because we know Nico Iamalava and UCLA are going to exercise that same thing. That's what they did against Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, they'll certainly try. And I think Ohio State would like it if somebody tested them that way. They need to probably, Matt Patricia needs to prepare and see and adjust to as many things as possible before you get into the playoff, where, you know, the stakes are highest and you aren't going to have the same margin for error that you have against Purdue. I think they would welcome that next Saturday against UCLA. I think they would have welcomed a greater challenge today at Ross-Ade Stadium, if that existed. That just was never going to be in the cards with the talent that Barry Odom has to work with here. Maybe that will change down the road. Certainly looking for a quarterback in the future.
RJ Day in the building as a recruit for Purdue. Pretty cool opportunity for him. Ryan Day said he had to drive here by himself, which is kind of, you know, unique.
Yeah.
But overall, you have to like what Purdue did. I think that it was a good, not a test for Ohio State, but a good opportunity to work on some things that had to be worked on, and now you put it all together and hope you get healthy for next week. That's obviously the most important thing as you head back to Ohio Stadium for two games against UCLA and Rutgers. But now you have to figure out, you might leave this one feeling a little bit better, because you've got proof that Ian Moore can play, now you've got proof that Gabe Van Sickle can play. So like, there, it's that catch 22 of like, well, obviously we don't want guys to miss time with injury, but I think you feel better, and you can tell me if you think I'm crazy. Do you feel better about the offensive line after this game in general than I do, like, I'm just going to sound stupid, but
okay.
I think like the guys who played on the offensive line were more impactful than the receivers who had to play in place of Kyle Tate.
I think there's probably something to that. Although it was nice to see Mylon Graham bounce back and get that catch that he did in the second half. It was good to see Bryson Rogers have an impact again. He had a nice play on a third down there to move the sticks for Ohio State. You know, I said I wasn't going to nitpick. So one thing that you're going to get, not just what you saw from Gabe Van Sickle and what you saw from Ian Moore as they both get their first really extensive looks here, Josh Padilla and Ryan Day said that's not a long-term injury, and they think that he could be available next week against UCLA and at the latest by the Rutgers game in 2 weeks. So he's in that time frame to get back out there, and then you add one more piece of depth that wasn't even available to go get some of these reps. They would have been really important, I think, for Josh Padilla today, because I don't, as much as I praised Tiger Shibola against Penn State and the way he prepared for that game, where we saw him on that Wednesday night beforehand and we pointed it out, he's the last one working. On Wednesday night, I didn't see him as one of the last guys leaving the practice field. And today I thought he took a step back. And so when you're talking about the young guys making the most of that opportunity, I think they did. And I don't think I could say the same thing for Tiger Shibola today, which is disappointing to me because it felt like, all right, you'd had the light come on. You knew what it took to get to that next level, what Ohio State was going to need to see from a veteran player down the stretch. And, you know, maybe it's a one-off. Maybe it's just the way that this game worked and not everybody was clearly switched all the way on to play against Purdue. I totally understand all that. But other people are trying to fight for those opportunities and those reps to be on the field and contribute. And I think that was maybe the one thing that stood out to me as a missed opportunity, because Ryan Day talked about that. He was asked about it in the press conference. Like, you know, what do you make of that situation? And he said, I saw what you guys saw. I'm going to have to continue to evaluate that. So I think that was the one thing, if I'm leaving here today, where I'm like, I thought we were done talking about right guard, and clearly we're not.
Yeah.
Right. And now we've got to, now there's extra pieces, because again, you don't know about Padilla's injury. If he can't come back for the UCLA game and he's only partially back for Rutgers, like, is that enough to make you feel comfortable going into Ann Arbor? Like, these are all the pieces that you have to try to put together, but that remains a concern. And it's not picking on someone every single time when you see it, and you look and you're like, okay, who's
the I don't want to have to say it.
Who's the offensive lineman that is picking up the quarterback? Okay, it's Tegra again. Like, it's the same problems. And maybe Tegra's just a guy that plays a lot better against better competition. I don't know. I mean, I don't exactly know what it is, because he played well in the playoff. He played well against Penn State. He played well against Texas in the season opener. Like, maybe he's just like a guy that's inspired differently, the carrot and the stick and all that stuff. I don't know. But if you keep leaving the door open for other guys, eventually they're going to walk through it, and we're starting to see players push. I thought even Gabe Van Sickle on, like, his second play of the game came in, and I haven't seen an Ohio State guard pull the way he pulled on a little inside zone the way that he did. I was like, yeah, he's moving. Like, he looks pretty good out there. But you don't want to spend too much time stressing about it, because you don't know what's going to happen with Padilla and the other guys next week. But yeah, clearly, even without Josh Padilla, Ohio State still felt the need to, like, do some serious rotating there. And that's telling. Big day for Jaden Fielding, making two long field goals, a 49-yarder, a 45-yarder. That 49-yarder at the end of the half felt very similar to me to Blake Halbuehl's 56-yard field goal at Northwestern in 2019, where you're like, okay, let's just see what we can do here.
Two-minute drill.
Two-minute drill, snuck it inside of the upright. Jaden is going to be important at some point. He's going to have to make important kicks. And so getting those two long ones today, it's not windy today, but it's still a little different, you know, out here than it is where you're used to in Columbus. So who else? Caden McDonald? Unbelievably good.
Caden McDonald is awesome. I was going to say, you can tack on a nice punt from Joe McGuire. Yep. Nice returns from Brandon Ennis. Like, thumbs up to the special teams. Nice to be able to say that. There was no breakdown really in any of those phases for Ohio State today. So good progress to them. Good opportunities, making the most of that. Caden McDonald, as you mentioned, he is just simply phenomenal. You cannot run at Caden McDonald. I don't care who you are. Every time they needed a play in Purdue, like, there were a couple opportunities. Purdue's like, we're going to try and run here on third and two, third and three. And Caden McDonald's like, nah, I don't think that's going to happen. And he shut that down. Hedrick Houston continues to be on the upswing. I think that is worth pointing out. He got back in the starting lineup for Ohio State against Purdue. Jermaine Matthews stealing a deflected ball, turning that into an interception and a takeaway for the Silver Bullets. There's a lot of other people that we can name, but Jeremiah Smith is just, you can't take it for granted what he's doing.
You should be very appreciative of the opportunity to watch that guy play in the Scarlet and Gray. It's kind of insane that we get another year plus of him, because He would be the best receiver maybe in the NFL right now, not named Chase or Jefferson. So it's pretty remarkable what he does every week. And again, it seems like he's always irritated that he's not doing more, which I think is a sign of what makes him so great. It's a really good football team. I thought, I thought the running game was pretty okay when Bowen and Isaiah were the guys toting the rock. And I, again, thought James Peoples ran it well. I would like to see this team be a little more explosive in that area. But then again, you had an 80-yard touchdown run on the first play of the game called back. So,
yeah, the block wasn't even needed.
It's irrelevant. I mean, Jeremiah Smith should be allowed to do what he wants, Mr. Official.
You should be able to block a little in the back.
A little bit in the back.
But it didn't make any difference. And I think that Jeremiah Smith more than made up for it as that game went along. And, I feel like it is tough to thread the needle to talk about this game because, yeah, Ohio State is so much better than Purdue that they could have rolled out in almost any circumstance and won this game by 60. It quite obviously was not their intention to do so.
Yeah, they did not rush the passer at all. I mean, again, because of the respect that they have for Ryan Brown and his ability to scramble and make plays out of the pocket. So you didn't see any blitzing. You didn't see even a lot of freewheeling, let the defensive ends go get the pass or go get the quarterback. So it's frustrating because you see him and he's just standing back there and like, do-do-do-do-do, and then he still sneaks out for an 8 yards run. Ah, you got three guys spying him and he still gets 8 yards. But yeah, they're good players too on other teams. So they're not as good as Ohio State's, but they still are pretty good.
Yeah, Ohio State has way more than Purdue and more than most teams in the country, which is why they are still 9-0, still undefeated, still the reigning national champions, number one in the college football playoff selection committee's eyes as well. And they are still going to be there on Tuesday, spoiler alert, because Indiana nearly threw away their opportunity to move up at Penn State. But that's a conversation for another day. Maybe we'll get into that on Monday. Maybe we'll talk about that on a Born Blitz. Maybe we'll talk about it during the live show. During Talking Tuesday,
anything's possible.
Anything could come up, because the point is we're heading back to Columbus and we're not going to talk all that much about Purdue, I promise you, as we get ready to break down Ohio State's home game under the lights next week against UCLA. This one was officially a final, 34-10, Ohio State over Purdue, win number 9 for Ryan Day's team this year. These have been snap judgments about that very game. We are going to head home right now. He's Jeremy Birmingham. I'm Austin Ward. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.